Okay, we are about to start the deliberations of the Operations Committee, so if there are a large number of you who are not going to be attending that meeting, I'm warning you that we're about to get involved in these matters. Okay, I'm calling the meeting of the Operations Committee to order. I'd like, first of all, to have the quorum confirmed. Do we have a quorum, please?
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. We do have a consent calendar, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the consent calendar. Sparing makes the motion. Haggerty makes the second. All those in favor of adopting the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody in opposition? Hearing none, passes unanimously. That brings us to the topic of agenda item number 3. This is called the Columbus Day Strategies Update. I guess we're fortuitously close to Columbus Day, so it may be that once you've heard this discussion, that you'll pay close attention to traffic levels on Columbus Day and then start to make comparisons, and let's hope they're not invidious. I would like to introduce Melanie Crotty and Dan McElhaney, who are going to make the formal report. Commissioners will remember that we held a workshop back in March of this year in the city of Sonoma. And one of the items that we discussed at some length and which elicited a lot of interest from the participating commissioners was this the concept that we're about to have presented to us. So I just ask you to bear that in mind. This is as a direct result of your interest at the March workshop. So if you could go ahead with the presentation, please.
Good morning, Commissioners. Melanie Crotty, MTC staff. I will be turning over the speaker to Dan McElhaney, and he will provide an update on the work that Caltrans has been pursuing for the past, you know, over, I guess, 18 months on the status of the transportation management system equipment in the field. And then I will pick up the conversation and really kind of pick up from the commission workshop last March. So I'll turn it over to Dan now.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you, Chair McKenzie and Commissioners. Again, I'm Dan McElhaney. I'm your Caltrans District 4 Chief Deputy District Director for the Bay Area. And I want to start off first with my thanks to the ad hoc committee members, Commissioner McKenzie and Halstead, that provided us great leadership working closely with the MTC Caltrans TMS joint effort team, which includes Melanie and I, of course, and Andy and leadership from Steve and Bijan. Overall, this next slide shows the status of the TMS systems field equipment. This has been a high priority for our joint effort. To be sure, there's been some tremendous improvements since the fall of 2012 when we first came to update you on a quarterly basis. We made a decision to reorganize our asset management approach to these key field TOS elements, which serve our important traffic management center for the California Highway Patrol, Caltrans, and MTC, and all of our regional partners, particularly in incident response and regional emergency readiness. Both agencies have brought expertise and skills to our focus and on the operations and maintenance assessment and solutions. As we focused on this program early on, the asset management best practices for inventory, prioritizing, field assessment, and we have over 3,700 elements in TMS and growing every week as construction completes on so many terrific projects. But resource and contract needs evaluations has been an important part of this effort with the focus on a Caltrans project manager and an overall team, which includes traffic, maintenance, electrical engineers, electrical maintenance team members who have been refocused with the project management effort to best utilize our resources. This provides us the success that you see here since we're looking at the key elements of ramp metering, changeable message signs, closed-circuit TV cameras, and traffic detection stations. And don't forget, we also have 100% performance requirement in these same resources on highway lighting, traffic signals. We have over 1,000 traffic signals in the Bay Area on the highway system, pump stations, substations, bridges and tunnel systems for the electrical side, which includes fire, life, and safety and security at those bridges and tunnels. So the same set of resources is keeping focus on this, but also helping us make these improvements. And as you can see, ramp metering, our performance level is averaging at 95%. And the system has grown since 2012 from 347 to 403 ramp meters. And out of the 23 that are down, for instance, two are due to wire theft, one's due to knockdown, and 20 are in construction zones, so they're temporarily down. So we've got an excellent team tracking this and giving us reports on a monthly basis. And the growth of the ramp metering system, we always have to remember growth. We'll have another 50 ramp meters online here in the Bay Area by the end of this year, and over another 150 new next year online. So the growth of the system is important as we move forward to in our planning and strategy on the O&M side. Also, if I can highlight the changeable message signs, the improvements since 2012, it's over 30% in performance. And on CCTV cameras, over 34% improvement. So and we're maintaining that on a monthly basis, even though we have a number of degradation issues, which I'll cover in just a moment. This graph has been updated since our last quarterly report. And when we talk about degradation, these two graphs, one is for ramp meters and the other is for CCTV cameras. The top graph shows the cumulative repairs, and the second line shows the cumulative failures since January 2013. So we're dealing with a number of degradation issues out in the system, and that's important as we move forward in understanding the assessment and the evaluation of how to keep the system performing at a higher level. In this graph, it shows 186 ramp meter locations repaired or replaced, and 108 others, or some of the same actually, having knockdowns and other wire theft issues. And the cameras, it shows 507 repaired and nearly 400 that had other issues during that time period that need repair or replacement. And briefly, recall that the field equipment outage summary, as we troubleshoot and track the types of outages and data since January 2013, roughly went about 30% wire theft as the problem during that time period, and 44% related to hardware failure of controllers, modems, cables, or other display or camera units. We're tracking this data. This helps us plan ahead for the future and what it's going to take for us to manage the system on the operations and maintenance side. And teaming with CHP, we have done some wire theft mapping for them, and they know some focus areas so they can continue their investigations. But these are the types of outages and the outage history, which is important as we move ahead and continue to invest in the system. And lastly, let me cover the field equipment performance projection. We haven't locked in our overall expectations on performance.
Oops. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. It's best to have all elements above 70%, the key elements, ramp metering and changeable message signs, above 90%. Overall, the additional resources needed beyond state maintenance and electrical forces, with Director Malcolm Doherty and Bijan's work, they've been able to bring in $21 million in state extra contracts on an urgent basis to support this work since January 2013. This has helped us to achieve this higher performance level. That's been $15 million of that $21 million has been completed and invested in the system to get us to this level of performance. So we use that to project ahead on a monthly basis with our contractors and our service contracts. We're about $750,000 a month invested. And to project to the higher performance levels that we all expect out of the system, we're estimating $1 million to $1.5 million of those types of contracts, although we can see some efficiencies as we move towards performance-based contracts. And that's where I'll turn it over to Melanie. But I'll wrap up with, again, the degradation of the system, about 5% a month. As we see growth across the system and as we complete construction, we'll have a better handle as we move forward. Thank you.
Before we move on, Commissioner Haggerty has a question.
I've always been a critic of the level of enforcement we've done on the ramp metering. And I don't know if it's getting better or worse, but I see a CHP car sitting sometimes right at the bottom of the ramp and single occupancy vehicles going right through the carpool lane. So it's still frustrating me, but I know you can't answer questions to that. But what I'm really wondering is when we talk about the degradation of the system, I mean, it's all about money, right? So when the CHP write tickets for the violation, say it's a toll violation or a ramp metering violation, where does that money go? Does that go just into the state's general fund, or is there a way that that money could be captured and put back into this system?
It currently doesn't come back to the system directly. I'd have to check, but it either goes back to the state general fund or the state highway account, but it's probably more likely the general fund, as you say. So that doesn't come direct back to the system, and I can certainly echo your concerns about enforcement with the Golden Gate Division of CHP as we work closely on these systems together.
Could we get some sort of understanding in the future as where the money's going on the tickets that's being written?
Sure, Commissioner. I do recall the one instance I'm aware of, I think, is HOV lane enforcement. There is some sharing of revenue there. So we'll loop back with you on that.
Thank you.
And I think, actually, that's a very good sort of introduction to the next topic. All of us who are involved in local governments know the problems of maintaining monies for operations and maintenance. We tend to get fixated on capital monies and the building of edifices and infrastructure, but the difficult part is once you have that infrastructure in places in maintaining it. And you can tell from Dan's presentation and that projected operational performance without another injection of money. And we're very thankful to the state for these emergency dollars that have brought us up, but we're going to drop right back unless we continue to get monies coming in on the O&M side. Mr. Executive Director.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just chime in on that one, because this is a very important point, and it's an issue where I really think we're failing to take full advantage of the law. California has a very strong, both constitutional and statutory framework that requires that operation and maintenance and rehabilitation of the system are first and second priority before you get to capital expansion, which is in the STIP. That's the way the law reads. The fact that these facilities are not being adequately maintained, in my opinion and in my experience, is a matter of priority within the department. It's not a matter of the statute preventing that outcome. In fact, the statute requires that outcome. Now, to be fair, the state is balancing the fact that it's got this big system it's got to maintain and repair with the fact that we're growing as a state, too. And so we need to make enhancements to that system. But the statute is clear that operation, maintenance, and rehabilitation come first. And I think we're really facing the challenge now in Sacramento where we've got to give the law that real meaning in our actions and no longer cheat the maintenance of the system so that we can have a few bucks extra in the STIP. I mean, to put it bluntly, that is the place we are now, given the lack of additional funding flowing into the system. We've got to see whether we're going to live up to what the priorities that the law says we should in carrying them out.
I thank you for these comments, and I will turn to our MTC chair, Commissioner Chair Worth. This is an informational item on this committee, so we do not have action proposed on the part of the committee. It's to accept these reports, but I would certainly ask if you and I could have a conversation about agendizing this item for the full commission and see if we can't, and we've set a very good example here in MTC, as I remember all of our discussions about where we put our transportation dollars on maintaining this vast infrastructure, to go back to the state of California and to support the work that our District 4 staff have been doing to keep us going.
You know, I would concur and very happy to do that. And as you pointed out, as our systems become much more complex and rely on technology, it's not just a matter of driving a truck out and fixing a pothole. When these electronic systems start to fail, we are really diminishing the capacity of the system. So, absolutely, great idea.
And thank you, Mr. Executive Director. I'd like now to turn, make every day Columbus Day in the Bay Area. So, Melanie Crotty, the floor is now yours.
Good morning, and that discussion, I think, is extremely relevant to the presentation that I'm going to give, and I'll try to kind of weave the comments in from what we just heard from commissioners. Maybe, though, to take a step back, we did have a commission workshop earlier this year, and a big discussion topic there was freeway management and what MTC's role should be in effective management of Bay Area freeways. We had a very lively discussion about the pros and cons and various aspects of MTC should take on greater ownership of the freeway. And we got very constructive feedback from the commissioners there, recognizing the importance and value of really eking every bit of effectiveness out of the freeways as we can. But at the same time, MTC needs to be playing to its strength. That, I mean, probably similar to the last meeting about concern about scope creep. Let's play to MTC's strengths and really kind of align that with Caltrans's strength and really improve our partnership there rather than continuing to seek ownership. There was also a good discussion about what we were calling these Columbus Day strategies, and the feedback there was the commission was very much interested in continuing to pursue those types of projects. The there is a recognition that Plan Bay Area had a very modest investment in freeway operations and freeway management, and so that the commission agreed that we needed to be as effective as possible in any future investments that we make. Just as a reminder, this was a slide that was shown at the workshop. Columbus Day is Monday, so you can test this yourself. It's a simple story. There's Columbus Day is not a big holiday, but few people get it off, so there's a small reduction in volume of traffic on the freeways. That small reduction actually produces a pretty significant reduction in travel time delays, and you can kind of see that on these two example corridors in the Bay Area. What we've done since March is really come up with a slate of projects that we think will serve as good testing ground for effective strategies. The first four strategies here are projects that we hope to implement. The last two are planning work that we're doing to either strengthen our partnership with Caltrans or provide a roadmap for our future freeway enhancements. I'll be going through each of these in detail in the next few slides. So first off, we have been working with Caltrans and the Bay Area Council to come up with a pilot project for two new park-and-ride facilities. The thinking is that park-and-ride lots are an underutilized capacity or capability in the region, that if we had better located and nicer facilities that were safe, that we could help address the mobility by making transit, carpooling, and express bus more attractive. Right now, we are in the feasibility stage of evaluating two prospective sites that are under Caltrans ownership. They are just right-of-way that we want to convert to park-and-ride facilities. And through the Bay Area Council, we're working with the private sector to hopefully come up with a grant to pay for the capital improvements of those lots and pay for at least the initial operations of the lots. If successful with this pilot, then we would be able to proceed with hopefully a regional model where we really have a public-private partnership, which would allow us to expand park-and-ride facilities at a very low cost to the public sector. The next one really keys off what Dan was talking about as far as the director's orders, emergency executive orders. We are in the final stages of launching a pilot on Interstate 880, where MTC would be managing a contractor to be doing the rehab and repair of the TOS field equipment. These contractors would be held accountable for meeting certain performance standards, such as device uptime and response and repair time. We are hoping by using a contractor and having these performance measures, we will get a better handle on, to validate the costs that Caltrans staff have come up with for the ongoing repair and maintenance, and as well streamline those costs to really kind of bring those numbers down. At the conclusion of this pilot, we hope to have a better sense of the inventory of the equipment and to be able to have improved life cycle planning for future cost estimates. The next one, the San Francisco Bay Bridge metering light system. This metering system was installed in the late 70s and has been largely left untouched other than repair and maintenance since then. We think there's tremendous opportunity to make improved throughput on the bridge through smarter metering. So MTC is partnering again with Caltrans on this, and we are looking at a series of short-term improvements to make sure the existing system works as well as possible while we plan for a longer-term, more holistic upgrade of the metering. The short-term improvements will be finished this winter, and we're looking for a complete upgrade in the next 2 years. The next project that we are working on with Caltrans is a series of improvements to the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge corridor. There are three projects. The first is what we're calling the peak period use lane, which is taking advantage of the shoulder on the lower deck in the eastbound direction. We are looking to convert that to a peak period third travel lane to address or to ease congestion during the commute hours. In tandem with that, we are looking to skinny down the upper deck so that we can squeeze in a bike lane that would connect the Contra Costa Pass, the bike pass, with Marin Bike Pass. The third piece of this puzzle is to implement ramp metering on the Marin 101 corridor leading to the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge. We are currently in the environmental studies phase for these projects and hope to have them done in May of 2016, and we'll have the remainder schedule ready at that point. Next is a project that we are really in the stages of announcing. We will be coming later this month to BAPA to get approval for the consultant to conduct the Bay Area Managed Lanes Implementation Plan. This plan is really an update to the 2002 HOV Master Plan that was done by the Commission now over 12 years ago. This update will be looking at the performance of our current HOV lanes, current express lanes, and future express lanes to help map what our future plans might be. We'll be looking at where we want to expand, where per Plan B area. We'll be also looking at an option of perhaps looking at take a lane from a general purpose lanes as an option. We will be looking at managed lanes operational policies, such as occupancy and hours of operations, and violations enforcement. Also as part of this, we will be looking at high-priority systems enhancements. This is where the Columbus Day concept would come in. Where else might we implement certain freeway management improvements to improve the overall freeway operations? This plan is not just a plan, but it also does have a focus on implementation. It's our expectation that this will serve as a roadmap for immediate next steps. Then lastly, MTC and Caltrans are working to finalize a cooperative agreement between the two agencies to really kind of make sure that we have a continued path forward on freeway management. As you may recall, last year, MTC and Caltrans signed an MOU where we indicated our intent to sign this co-op agreement. The commission workshop validated this concept, and we've been working since then with the topics that you see here where we are attempting to align MTC's strengths with the strengths of Caltrans. The key thing that I would like to point out here, and really is keying off the earlier conversation, is that I think the biggest challenge that we have in this co-op agreement is identifying funding. The state has historically not provided as much in freeway operations and has really had a focus on new projects and safety. And we are really hoping that through this co-op agreement that we can come up with some kind of concept to encourage greater state funding. We believe that MTC will need to come up with some funds, and we are really at this point, pursuing the concept of a challenge grant as a way to advance funding from both parties. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that presentation. Let me just say that we have, with Commissioner Halstead and with my vice chair, Steve Kinsey, been working with this group. We've been reviewing these presentations, and it's with a certain amount of anxiety, I will confess, that we bring this back in front of you, but I believe that it's responsive to the spirit of the workshop, the questions that were raised at that time. And in that last slide, it brings into focus a rather interesting cooperative agreement approach, which I believe, and again, Madam MTC Chair, I've been trying to figure out in my own mind just how to proceed from here. Clearly today what you are hearing is identified as an informational item, and it's been laid out in front of you. There'll be a chance to ask specific questions from here on out. But my question as the chair of this committee and the chair of the ad hoc committee is, where do we move from here? This is, I don't know if aspirational is the right word, but it's certainly a major undertaking to negotiate such a master cooperative agreement, and particularly in light of the funding questions that have been brought up. So I'm hoping that through some mechanism, again, I believe the full commission, since this was something that came up at the commission workshop, should have an opportunity to hear this presentation and to weigh in once we in the operations committee have made our comments. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a couple things. One, I think that one of the things that this focuses on is not only making our freeway corridors work more efficiently, but also that concept of the last mile. You know, one of the problems we have is access to, you know, and trying, how do we encourage carpooling? And one of the ways is providing the, you know, the regional park and rides that provide the ability for people to get that last mile to, you know, get to a carpool. And I really think that the partnership that we have with Caltrans is particularly important. And I want to thank Caltrans. We recently had a, moving a park and ride in our community next to the Caldecott Tunnel. And it really took a partnership with the local agency, Caltrans, and the, you know, to do that. And I think it was that partnership that enabled us to invest in a, you know, really upgrade the park and ride, make it more accessible. And so it's an example of, you know, working together, how we can achieve these goals. But we really do need to provide this, you know, increase in the access. So I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you bringing this forward to keep us informed, because this is the kind of thing that it affects our communities every day, and they really, you know, see the benefits. So,
and our commitment at the workshop was, as an ad hoc committee, that we in fact would bring reasonably fully formed planning effort and proposed implementation effort back to the operations committee, and by this I'm asking you that we would have an opportunity to present to the full commission at a time that staff thinks is appropriate.
That makes sense. I think it also provides a good basis for an advocacy platform that goes to look to the funding of these kinds of programs, recognizing that we need that fix it first and
as we get ready to deal with the new legislature when it's seated in Sacramento in January. Thank you, but there may well be questions from other members of the committee and other commissioners who are here today, so I'm looking around and I'm seeing Commissioner Bates.
Okay, sir, thank you. I just had a quick question. Dan, I'm wondering about, first of all, congratulations on the improvement. That's really quite an accomplishment. But I'm wondering, are you doing LED lights? Is that pretty much standard? And because it seems like that's an opportunity to save a lot of money over the long run.
Thank you. And it was a team effort. I want to compliment MTC staff. as well as the Caltrans staff, for the teamwork over the last couple of years focused on this important subject. The department, and here in the Bay Area, we are aggressively changing over to LED lamps. We have quite a good program going towards that, as well as improving our sign panels so we can move away from having to light our sign panels. We have over 2,700 planned, and we're teaming here in the Bay Area for that here in the next year or so, so that sign panels will be more reflective and won't need that additional highway lighting. So we are looking to reduce our expenses and lengthen the light and reduce our maintenance and the lifespan of the lighting. And so we continue to see progress over that. I can bring more details on that at a future meeting as well.
Good. We recently in our city converted to LED lights, and it's just unbelievable how much brighter and better they are and cheaper over the long run.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see no other indication of questions at this time, so I think this is a good opportunity to thank both of our presenters for the efforts that have gone into this. And without getting overly obsequious or anything like that, I think it's fair to say that the relationship between the District 4 Caltrans staff and our MTC staff to get to this point, I think, speaks very highly of the degree of cooperation. And it certainly gives us real encouragement to go out and look for more money to continue this progress that we've heard about today. So thank you very much. And we're now ready to move on to an interesting topic under agenda item number 4. It's kind of, one might think, oxymoronish to see in a transportation meeting Lysol Costco, but then the word Clipper is after that, Clipper card branding and test distribution. So Brian Gebhardt and our consultant Jennifer Largia-Spada are going to present a pilot idea to us, and this is a committee approval item.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Brian Gebhardt.
I'm looking the wrong way.
We hopped over here.
He doesn't look like Brian.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Brian Gebhardt. I'm a Clipper program coordinator, and I'd like to introduce Jennifer Largia-Spada. She's a Clipper consultant staff. She works primarily on our retail networks and institutional programs, and she's been working very hard to bring this item to the Commission's attention, and she'll be presenting it today for your approval and being able to answer any comments. Jen?
Good morning. I wanted to briefly summarize this for you and then hopefully can answer any questions you might have. The Clipper program has been approached several times over the last few years by Costco asking to distribute Clipper cards through their stores. However, due to the discount needed actually to distribute through the Costco stores, the Clipper program has been unable to fund that discount and been able to partner with Costco. So recently, Costco brought one of their vendors to meet with us as a potential distribution partner. Reckitt Benckiser, who is the parent company to Lysol, is interested in purchasing a limited number of Clipper cards with the cash value of $100 on each card and then offering them for sale at Costco through their existing vendor relationship with Costco. Lysol will be covering the discount needed to sell through Costco, which is $20.01, and they will also pay Lysol for, or they'll pay Costco for their distribution fee as well. So the cards will be sold for $79.99 to the customers, and Lysol will be covering the $27.01 that are required to sell the cards at Costco. And in exchange, we will brand those Clipper cards as Lysol cards. And I believe there's an attachment that shows potential card art. Thank you. And Lysol is also going to pay for the custom printing of these cards. And this is a non-exclusive agreement with Lysol that just covers this pilot with them. And since this is the first time a promotional opportunity has been offered to a partner in exchange for a discount to the customer, we've developed this sole source request. And we had determined that had MTC tried to go out and secure a partnership like this on our own, we would have been unlikely to find a partner that was willing to cover such a financial contribution and find one that also had an existing relationship with Costco. So in summary, staff requests that the operation committee authorizes the executive director to enter into the sole source contract with Lysol for the described distribution arrangement, providing Lysol with a limited Clipper branding opportunity in exchange for payments by Lysol of up to $175,000 to benefit the Clipper program.
Thank you for that succinct report. I know that Commissioner Haggerty has a question, and maybe others of you do as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think there's a couple concerns that I have, although they would not preclude me from voting today. I think it would be really important that we develop some sort of guidelines of how we're going to move forward, because once we start this, I could see like the Scott Haggerty for Supervisor campaign coming forward and wanting to maybe do Clipper cards too. And I think it would be important that we have some sort of procedures out there of what we want to have on our cards and what we don't want to. So I think that would happen. Also, I am a bit concerned though, because Costco is a membership organization, and maybe you've already got around this. I mean, is there a way that if somebody's not a member of Costco, they can come in and purchase the card?
We did, in fact, ask Costco about that, and they don't have a way to sell anything outside of the members-only area. I think the and so you would have to have a membership in order to go in and.
You know, I think in the future it would be really good that we maybe develop this program with, and I'll just throw out a couple names. CVS. If you hate CVS, I apologize. Other areas, and I would even say maybe a Walmart, and because lower income people tend to frequent Walmart, and this is really a program that I don't really believe is going to really help the lower income people that could probably really benefit from a $20 discount on a Clipper card. And so I think we need to figure out a way to get into somebody else, maybe even talk to Lysol and say, hey, look, this is really cool that you're doing this at Costco, but we really think we should do this at CVS too, because we're really excluding the lower income people, because they don't pay $75 for a Clipper, or they don't pay $75 a year for a Costco card. You know, they don't buy in bulk like that. They can't. My wife's at Costco right now, and I know darn well it's with my credit card, and it's $500. $500. You can't go into Costco without spending $200. So I hope my message doesn't get lost in my wife's story, but I think it's really something we need to consider.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You have to spend to save, Scott.
Commissioner Aguirre. Please.
You mentioned that this is limited up to $175,000. Is there an opportunity for renewal, or is it just a one-time only?
What's going to stop somebody from going in and buying a bunch?
Right now, it's just a one-time only, and so it would be dependent on the outcome of this if this is something that they were interested in doing again. And so we won't know until we actually get further into it.
Thank you.
I'm seeing no other. Commissioner Liccardo.
I was just reminded of a good question by my colleague, Commissioner Haggerty. And is there any way to control how many of these cards are actually being purchased at a time, so that we don't have a resale opportunity for someone for arbitrage?
Costco does not, they do not restrict the purchase, but the Clipper license agreement restricts the resale of cards, and so that's something.
But there's no way to enforce that restriction on resale, right? We're not employing a police force out there to do that. There's no way to have any agreement with Costco where they'll limit the number of cards per customer?
That's something we could check into, but I don't believe that's something that they normally do.
I can imagine how customers who are in the habit of buying in bulk could do so here.
But
so
Costco does limit sales on certain items, so I would think that it would be a possible thing.
I guess I'd ask the maker of the motion to incorporate that direction that we would seek a way to actually constrain the sales at point, because otherwise we're just going to see someone taking advantage of this for their own financial gain.
Commissioner Liccardo, you just made a motion to accept, I understand it, to accept the staff recommendation with a proviso on the control over the sale of cards to individuals. Is that correct?
As well as a constraint on the purchasing of Mrs. Hagerty at Costco.
So, Mr.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
There's a second, but
so Liccardo makes a motion. Hagerty seconds the motion.
So wait, I just want to make sure the second.
We now have discussion.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that what I just second. Are we just asking staff to go back and try to work it out, or are we telling them that if they don't work it out, we're out? I mean, I don't think we really want to say if they don't work it out this time. But I think, again, this goes back to where I started. We need to set parameters on these programs so, you know, it's better understood and how we can protect all income statuses of the constituents that we represent. So I would like to just make a request to staff work on what was said today. And if it doesn't happen this time, that it certainly happens next time.
Yeah, let me restate the motion.
Okay.
Clear. First, that we inquire to Costco to limit the number of cars that can be sold on point. Secondly, that we reach out to other retailers as well to ensure there is a broader demographic that can have access to discounted cards. And let me just ask, is there time sensitivity to this? Is this about to launch?
They're waiting for the approvals here, and then we'd be moving forward to actually enter into our official agreement with Lysol.
Okay. Just trying to understand if this can come back in a month. Does that hold everything up?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. I guess if there is not a path forward under either of these addenda to the motion, it would be helpful, I think, for this committee or the MTC to be informed some way. That's all I would ask.
I'm fine with that. Thank you.
I would ask, and we'll see how the vote goes in this particular motion, but certainly I would anticipate that this matter would return at least as an informational item to this committee in terms of progress. Mr. Spitting, any? No?
No. Is the motion to go forward or approve this and then staff report back on those items that were
and try raised to incorporate some of the stuff
okay,
that we're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I think it's important that we go forward today.
Yeah.
I agree. Commissioner Tissier?
Just a quick question, or maybe another thing. I'm not on the committee, so someone would have to accept this. But, you know, I always hate when we legislate to the lowest common denominator. We're assuming there's going to be someone doing something wrong. Is it possible if Costco can't limit it for whatever reason that we ask for some kind of a calculation of how many of the customers bought large quantities? I mean, I guess I'm not seeing this as something. I mean, we haven't seen Fast Track. The people are just gobbling them up and reselling them. So it concerns me that we always do that. We always legislate to the lowest common denominator. But if it doesn't work that they can do the minimum, is there something, an alternative, so that the program doesn't have to come back, but that maybe, you know, they track all these things. They could find out if 10 customers bought 100 of them, or, you know, the average is people bought one or two. If that may be a way to do it without having to make it so difficult by trying to limit everything all the time. Because if you're a company, I could say I might want to go and give, in my case, I'm not a company employee, but I might want to get 20 of them and give them to my staff. I mean, that might be a perk for my staff. And so now you're saying, well, we can't do that. We're going to limit it to two. It concerns me. That's always been my issue with legislating to the wrong audience. So I just throw that out for consideration.
I'm happy to incorporate that in the motion.
Thank you, Commissioner. Staff, any thoughts in this matter?
We can certainly request that, and I think Costco would probably be, I hope they would be happy to do that. Since this is a limited test pilot, it's not going to be happening in more than a handful of stores, so this tracking should be relatively easy for them.
I think that's what you do in a pilot program.
If I might just comment here, well, I will just comment. Clearly, the questions that have been brought up by the committee are worthy of full consideration by staff. I would say that if the pilot program goes ahead and there's a report back to this committee, there's certainly, as Commissioner Haggerty has stated, if there's going to be more than a pilot, and if this in fact becomes something that becomes widespread, the need for an MTC policy in this matter is readily apparent, I believe. And I don't know if anybody feels like answering that or not, but Mr. Executive Director?
Well, as stated, it is a pilot. So I think a pilot before a policy is probably okay. But I hear you that you don't want 12 pilots coming before we have a policy. This one's been a long time coming, by the way, so I wouldn't expect a land office rush here.
Well, I appreciate the staff's report, and I appreciate the commissioner's interest in this matter. We do have a motion on the floor, and I'll call the question. All those in favor of the motion on the floor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none.
What was the motion? Okay. I mean, we're approving the pilot project, and we're going to have information come back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. The seconder of the motion is that they're also going to try to go back and maybe work through a few of these things that we've asked about, and maybe as far as limiting the quality, the quantity being one, and then also I guess staff is going to also see if there's another way we could distribute these. And I would hope that maybe Lysol would even say, look, we'll do it through CBS too or somebody else.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to change my vote to no. I think we have a pilot project. It should work well the way it's being proposed. I think these are interesting questions for which to gather information on. But I think to immediately request that we change the policy before we even have the data is definitely the wrong approach.
Thank you, Commissioner Luce. I did call the question, so we have one no vote, and otherwise this matter proceeds to approval with the conditions stated in the motion, and we look forward to hearing back on the success or otherwise of this pilot. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. What I didn't hear in the motion, and I thought Mr. Liccardo said he liked the idea of not only doing the limitation, but also the idea of trying to gather statistics on how many cards would be sold so you can determine whether it's a problem. Did I hear that? Okay. Was that part of the final motion? Okay. I'm sorry. When they repeated the motion, I didn't hear that.
I'm sorry.
I think it's fair to say that there will be a record of the deliberations of this committee, that a motion has been approved to proceed, and that committee members enunciated certain ideas that are going to be presented to Lysol / Costco with a hope that they will be implemented in this one pilot program involving the 6,000 plus cards. That's my understanding.
And if they're not, the pilot program goes forward.
Pilot program is, we have said, we're recommending that it goes forward.
Yeah, that's fine. I think we've completed.
Thank you, fellow committee members, for the sanitation, and thank you, staff, for answering our questions. And now we have one final item in front of this committee, agenda item number 5, a contract on the Regional Transportation Emergency Preparedness Support. Timely, in that this is the 25th anniversary approximately of Loma Prieta, and we have Noah Tunick, is that correct, who is going to present this request for approval of a contract.
Well,
you guys keep asking questions and stuff. Don't give me a bad time.
That's
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Noah Tunick. I'm MTC's Emergency Management Coordinator. As a short introduction to this item, a video has been prepared that emphasizes the importance of regional transportation preparedness.
On Tuesday, October 17, 1989, at 17 hours, 4 minutes, 15 seconds, Pacific Daylight Time, a strong motion earthquake emanated from a location 60 miles south-southeast of San Francisco, near Loma Prieta, in the Santa Cruz Mountain Range. The main shock, the largest to strike the San Francisco Bay Area since 1906, ruptured a segment of the San Andreas Fault and had a magnitude of 7.1. Two 50-foot-long roadway segments of Interstate 80 on the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge collapsed, along with a three-quarter-mile-long segment of Interstate 880 freeway known as the Cypress Street Viaduct.
How is the total emergency?
Cypress section of the West Grand Freeway has come down.
The Cypress structure has collapsed. We have 238. We have a major injury accident. Cypress and West Grand. They're advising major injuries. We're attempting to get 1141.
We have a 50-foot section which is collapsed from westbound into eastbound.
Said the upper deck collapsed into lower deck.
From westbound into eastbound.
Because the uncollapsed portion of the 32-year-old viaduct was severely damaged, a decision was made to immediately begin demolition. Dismantling of 80,000 tons of concrete and steel rubble continued until early 1990. Construction crews worked 24 hours a day for 30 days to complete the repairs needed to reopen the bridge. They removed the damaged 160-ton roadways, then realigned the 3,000 feet of bridge from the tower to Oakland. And finally, the roadways were paved and the bridge reopened November 17, 1989.
As you can see, this video is a very realistic reminder of the very real dangers our region faces from natural disasters. The upcoming 25th anniversary of the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake marks 2.5 decades of MTC working with the Bay Area Transit Agencies and the California State Office of Emergency Services on developing coordinated multimodal regional transportation plans. These efforts collectively strengthen the region's resiliency to a major catastrophic event. Over the years, MTC, in partnership with these transit agencies, have conducted 18 region-wide exercises that focus on coordinating the development of regional emergency plans and have coordinated responses to several localized events, including the 2013 BART strike, the 2012 West Oakland fire near the BART structure, and the 2007 MacArthur Maze fire. We consider these exercises to be important because they enable us to pinpoint weaknesses in our current processes and, perhaps just as importantly, create the opportunity to introduce and build relationships between different agency staff and those staff that respond to these exact emergencies. On July 23, 2014, MTC issued a request for proposal for consultant services to develop a multi-year exercise program. This program will test the Regional Transportation Emergency Management Plan, will conduct an assessment of all regional emergency plans, and undertake emergency preparedness activities within the Bay Area. An evaluation panel composed of representatives of MTC, VTA, BART, and Caltrans reviewed proposals from URS and Tetra Tech. While both firms had extensive knowledge in conducting emergency preparedness activities, the panel unanimously recommended URS for its well-written proposal and its clear understanding of regional transportation issues. Staff recommends the Operations Committee authorize the Executive Director to negotiate and enter into contract with URS in an amount not to exceed $695,575. To provide regional transportation emergency preparedness support. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Any questions of staff on this item? See none. Commissioner Mr. Haggerty Chair. Moves the item. Who seconds?
Second.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Oh,
sorry. Doreen.
I don't know if I could just ask, thank you. I don't know to what extent this is relevant, but I'm wondering if in terms of what you're proposing to do, would there be involvement with regard to emergency preparedness as it would affect people with various disabilities?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the areas of focus that we've started in recent years and would like to conduct continuously is emergency response for paratransit and really integrating sort of a regional response, but understanding communication as that's been sort of our biggest issue, connecting the larger agencies and paratransit response.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. All those in favor of this approving the staff recommendations, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? No one opposed. Passes unanimously. That brings us to public comment. I have no public comment cards. The next meeting is Friday, November 14th. It says at 9:35 a.m. And that depends on the speed at which the Chair Spearing gets through his business. But anyway, we'll see you all then. This meeting is adjourned.